I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the December 10th. It's Wednesday, already getting towards the middle of December, just a few weeks away from Christmas Day. Sean, last night, again, we keep telling you, we do our bet of the day every single day, and we see the lines, and we talk about the lines, and Vegas is just so spot on. So Monday Night Football, over under 40, I think it was 41 and a half, 41 hits. Last night, we got UConn, Florida, in college basketball. UConn minus 3.5. They win by 4, which we both took UConn. And I actually bet it last night that I thought they were going to win by more. Florida continues to show that they're still a really good team, but just not quite there to get over the hump against the really good teams, maybe the elite teams in college basketball, but they'll still be a contender once March rolls around. But, man, Vegas is just so good.
Yeah, good to see you, man. Three straight winning bets, too. Took the under and the Chargers on Monday night. Yeah. And last night, we both took UConn at Madison Square Garden. And Coach Hurley had him going on. Yeah, Vegas.
You did not disappoint.
Yeah, almost as if it's rigged. And, but it is.
Yeah.
So, like I said, he's Chevy Chase in one of his Christmas vacation movies. Just all the facial expressions, just his are a little more angry than Chevy's are. So,
yeah.
Love Coach Hurley. UConn's a player in this whole thing. It's going to be great when we head into the new year and conference play begins. But really good night of basketball, and we are on a roll on the betting side. So
we are.
Jump on in with us, folks. We appreciate it.
We will have our bet of the day to end the show. Sean, we got the winter meetings going on for baseball. It's not like it used to be 10 years ago when big things were happening constantly, but there's rumors of Scooble to the Dodgers. There's rumors of Kyle Tucker to the Dodgers. Edwin Diaz just signed with the Dodgers. The Dodgers do whatever they want. They have all the money to spend. It's insane. And if they get Scooble and Tucker to go with Diaz, I don't know. Just start the lockout now.
If they want them. If they want them, they'll get them. That's one. Two is you can't piss talk out of one side of your mouth.
Yep.
And tell me that, hey, it's great for the kids to have NIL. It's great that the rule changes and they get paid as much because the big dog's been getting paid all along. Great for the kids. Then turn around and be mad at the Dodgers because the rules allow, just like NIL, for them to spend whatever they want if they go over the luxury tax.
Yep.
That they're allowed to do it. Then do it. They're just the ones. It tells me they're committed to winning. Because Think about in your own life, when you spend a lot of money on something, you either love that, you're either obligated to in a divorce, or if you want it home, you want the car, you want the, you go get stuff you love. And if the Dodgers love that shiny object, it's going to bring two more guys and give them another better chance than anybody else to win the championship. Why should we be pissed? It ain't my money. It's their money. You're just pissed, or not you, but most people are pissed that their team's not doing the same damn thing.
100%.
So don't pee in my face and tell me it's raining and on one side, but yeah, NIL, it's great. And then be mad that the teams that are spending NIL make you angry, yet they're getting your recruit. And then the other side, if you hate the Dodgers for it, keep on hating. Because while it's not guaranteed you're going to win, I can tell you what, Scooble and Kyle Tucker on that team make them an overwhelming favorite to win it again next year, if that happens.
Overwhelming favorite, for sure. My White Sox got a little early Christmas present, get the number one pick in next year's draft, and UCLA has a shortstop that's going to be fantastic. So that'll probably be the pick. All right, before we hit Augusta Precious Metals, go like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. You can get notifications of when we go live. You can see all of our shorter videos. You can see every single show that we do for the hour or so that we do Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Follow Sean at Sean Unfiltered. Follow me at Adam G. Sager on X. We got a ton of football to talk about today, but before we get started, Sean, let's hit some Augusta Precious Metals.
Yes, it's your retirement and your life, your money. You want something that's devalued like the dollar or something that's on the rise like precious metals and gold. And Augusta Precious Metals has got exactly what you need. Educate yourself. That's all I'm saying. If you go there and aren't interested, that's on you. But once you go there, the hook is in. Why? Because you'll know the value of Augusta Precious Metals. You know, watching the players play every week in football and in life, the clock's always ticking. When it's late in the game, you don't freeze. If you do, you get left behind. Same thing with this. When it comes to society and money and dealing with all that goes on financially, stay calm and make the smart move. Honestly, that's how I've been looking at what's happening in our country and the economy for a couple of years now. Late to the precious metals party, Augusta comes along and I'm all in because of the education they've given me. We're about $38 trillion in debt. I'm going to hit 40 probably by next year. That's a kind of a pressure that puts on all of us, every single one of us, rich and poor and in between, wherever you think you are, especially folks trying to retire with confidence, which feels like a hard thing to do right now, but jump in and be informed. That's why I've been talking with the team at Augusta Precious Metals for a while. They're the ones helping people understand and educate how to keep part of their savings and something real in precious metals, gold, tangible assets. So it's not all tied to Washington and every decision they make, you got to hang on and ruin your day with no peace of mind. Peace of mind and security matter. They put together a short free guide, did Augusta Precious Metals, called the $40 trillion threat report. It explains what's going on and what options you have and you've got. It's simple, it's easy, and it educates you to make a smart decision. If you want to see it, there's a link in my description. Go text Sean to 35052. That's Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. Text Sean to 35052, and they'll send it over. Take a look when you have a minute. It's worth understanding, and it really is, guys. Like I said, I used to say, what's this all about? Now I know, and you will too. It's worth finding out what game you're playing. Confidence, security, and peace of mind matter. Augusta Precious Metals.
All right. Thank you to Augusta Precious Metals, one of our main advertisers here with the show, part of the family here on Unpaved. All right, Sean, let's jump right into some NFL. We're going to talk a lot of college football today. Talk about some of the NIL that you were discussing earlier when we were talking about the Dodgers spending all that money. A former quarterback talked about giving some NIL money to a player at his former school and basically getting nothing in return for it. But let's start in the NFL. We briefly hit on this yesterday. Do C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans have what it take to win a Super Bowl?
The answer today, offensively, have it, yes. Are they at it? No. If you're asking me, if we start on the defensive side of the ball, Sage, there's not three teams in this league today that you trust more on defense than them. Going them into this Denver. Season, no question. Denver gets after the quarterback. You got the edge rushers in Houston that disrupt games. They're getting so much better in the interior. We can't bully them in the run game. Matter of fact, I'm guaranteeing you they're thinking if our front five up front offensive line was as physical as the defense is in the front seven, we would be sitting here saying this team's different. Defense travels always in every sport. Baseball, pitching, middle infield, great defensive play. In basketball, if you'll defend and perimeter defend and contest shots, University of Houston in college, you'll have a chance to get to the Final Four every year. And then you got to have a few lucky things when you're scoring the basketball and in baseball, football, same way. Think back to teams. Great defenses may get you there, but that's where the Houston Texans offense comes into play, Sigs.
Right.
Think about the pieces. Marks has proven he's a gamer and a player. Offensive line at times getting better, but you saw last week when they had a little bit of extra push how it disrupts them, Sags. Because for quite frankly, Stroud made some really good plays in key moments. But when you're in single elimination football, it can't just be key moments. You got to sustain better play like their defense does. They got bullied. They got to stop getting bullied and get tired of the shit and step up. That's what offensively. Now, So defense, yes. Special teams, kicker, they've got good special teams. The key here for is to establish, and you look at the pieces, Sex, the tight end's been more relevant for them this year, which has been the position itself, which I think is huge. They've got a bell cow back now in Marks, no matter, I don't care, rookie or not. And he learned that from the great USC tradition. I'll just throw that in there, Sex, because I digress. Sure. Now, but we're not in the playoff. Anyhow, and then receivers. You see these young guys, Sex. I'm sitting here thinking 2 years from now, what's it going to look like with these young receivers that are stepping up in Kirk and then getting, hopefully, you know, getting the full healthy slate going into next year. But we're not worried about next year. And Nico Collins is as big a monster as there is in the league. And you've got to feature guys like, it comes down to this, Sex. Can you protect the quarterback? And who will C.J. Stroud be? Rookie C.J. Stroud, last year C.J. Stroud, in clutch moments this year, C.J. Stroud, or C.J. Stroud? There's a lot of layers to him. I trust that he can make these throws, Sex. I've seen it. But the question is, when is he going to get back to where game in and game out starts fast, plays fast in the middle, and plays fast at the end? And I don't mean his mind moving fast. I'm talking about decision-making, getting through reads. Because he's got everything you want. Players respond to him. He's pretty damn poised. One thing I still need him to do, Sex, is get back to the patient, relaxed pocket presence he had as a rookie. He should be passing. He's healthy now. Davis Mills kept them in it by playing. Turn it back over to him. Because without Davis Mills winning a couple of those games, we're not talking about the Texans. I mean, I'm saying with him at quarterback. If it's going to be a stat that we put on the quarterback, then we got to give that backup some credit for doing his job, right? But Stroud's the man. But they're going to go as far offensively as he takes them. And with that, you got to drop your balls all the way to your ankles if you're Nick Caley, the offensive coordinator. As the season goes on, you can't get more defensive, because with a defensive head coach, what happens, Segs, is the head coach thinks 17 to 10, we'll take it, kick a field goal, we'll play that way, our defense will get stops. And I would understand why D'Amico Ryans would do that. Nick Caley, you got to have autonomy. Remove it, be smart, where you're not putting in a wildcat on a two-point conversion, Cleveland. You're going to put it in C.J. Stroud's hands if that happens. But continue to expand as you move forward. Because the defense can only pitch so much, Segs. When they get to the playoffs, guess who they're going to face? Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Sean Payton's offense. You know what I'm saying? So there's going to be a different elevation. Defense travels. Offensively, to answer your question, they are not good enough offensively to play in February. They are good enough to get to January because the defense can take them there. If the offense gets within 75% of the defense, the Houston Texans in an AFC that we don't even know who the best team is, regardless of record, regardless of New England, do you really trust that New England's beating Buffalo in the playoffs right now? Maybe, maybe not. But the Texans, to have a chance, have got to get close for their offense to match what their defense does. And it's not going to happen this year, but they got to creep up closer, Six. The playoffs and single elimination stuff can't scare them away offensively or a coordinator. You got to put the pedal down instead of back it off. You can't put the brakes and gas on at the same time, because the brakes will always win.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, it all really depends on that offense. I think right now in this AFC, you know, you still look at with Kansas City and Baltimore, let's just say essentially out of the playoffs, because that's what they are. It will be a new team. We don't have Cincinnati and Joe Burrow because of the injury. I mean, we're looking at the Buffalo Bills. Can Josh Allen and them finally have that sustained success in January to get them to February? That's something we're waiting to see. But like you said, the AFC is just not the same as we're used to with Kansas City and Baltimore and Buffalo being near the top of the NFL. Speaking of that, let's jump right to
you know what it is real quick, Sakes. Yeah. You know what it is? I think there's certain pieces in the AFC, a Josh Allen, when Lamar's going good, when the Miami Dolphins can play finesse football. You know, I'm just picking certain parts. The NFC's got more substance from top to bottom.
Yeah.
So the AFC, they can match you piece for piece. The problem is in Buffalo, if the piece doesn't play great, they're not winning. They'll hang on. They just won't win. If the Stafford's running game is just going average, they're capable enough of using the passing game. They'll win still.
Right.
So that's my point, is getting to it. That's why we say about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh have a few pieces whenever you finally saw DK Metcalf show up last week.
Yep.
But they've got to sustain more consistency. So the pieces are good in the AFC. The soul is deeper in the NFC.
Yeah, and let's look at Fox's latest NFL power rankings. When we look at this, they do have the New England Patriots at number one in their rankings. And then they have the Denver Broncos at three. Then you have Buffalo at seven. And then you have Jacksonville at nine. So those are your AFC teams in the top 10 as it stands right now, according to Fox. But then you look at the NFC. You've got Seattle at two, who they have as their number one team. I think me and you would probably flip it with LA, with the Rams, with Matthew Stafford, with the way he's playing, with what they did to Seattle a few weeks back by just beating their brains in. But Seattle's still a very good team. Mike McDonald has that team playing at a high level. And then you have the Packers, the Bears, the Niners, the Lions. You have those teams right in the mix. And then I think you tell me if you agree with this. When I say you have the, you could even put the Seahawks, the Rams, the Bears, the Packers, and probably the Niners all in one group, and the Lions. Let's put them in that group as well, in my opinion. Then you have the Eagles. I think the Eagles are a tier down. Do you agree with that right now?
The way they're playing and the way the quarterback's playing, absolutely. Here would be my top 10 as we sit, Sakes. I am one. Listen, I know they know how to win, but they're showing reasons that they know how to lose as well now, the last couple of games.
Agreed.
Completely. I would have the Rams from my visual. And it's not just the naked eye and visual and studying them. I'm also thinking about postseason Moxie, who's been there and could handle pressure. I'm not talking about this week. I'm talking about late January to get to February. I'm only thinking, like, when we're talking about the college playoff, I don't give a shit if you can win one. I need you to win four. Anybody can upset anybody. A 15 can beat a two in the playoff, but can the 15 roll through and win six of them in a college basketball tournament? That answer, more than likely, we have is no.
No.
Until somebody proves it wrong. Rams one, Patriots two, Seahawks three, because right now I think Darnold's better than Bo Nix. I just do.
I do too.
Broncos four, Packers five. I'm going to flip Segs because of Josh Allen's presence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put them ahead of Green Bay, which would make them six. I mean, not Green Bay, them ahead of Chicago, put them six. I will put the Bears seven, but close, Segs. And it simply comes down to the quarterback's ability to take over a game, right? Of Josh Allen.
I would put Josh Allen above the Packers too.
I think I would too. My concern is I still like Green Bay's defense better. Does that make sense, Segs?
That makes sense.
That makes sense. So, but it's six and one, half dozen the other.
Yeah.
49ers at eight, and we haven't seen the 49ers play consistently their best football yet. I don't think, but injuries. But we can't make those excuses. I would actually, in a game, and I know I'm wrong because the record, I like Detroit more than Jacksonville. I would have the Lions ahead of Jacksonville. I trust them more after having been there. And then I would put Jacksonville, then that Jacksonville, Philadelphia, Chargers, Texans. Think about this. 2 years ago, people wanted the Carolina Panthers, the quarterback, we want him out. He shouldn't have been the first pick.
Yeah.
Now look at him. Get a new coach. There's the Canales in there. Now they're sitting in the 14 hole, top 15 ahead of teams that you would have said there's no way they're ahead of them. So once you get from 11, that 11 to 15 range, you could flip them any way you want, Sakes, because all of them have a strength, but there's still a weakness. The tackles with the Chargers, right? The Philadelphia Eagles quarterback play, the Texans overall offense, the Carolina Panthers. I don't know, man. It's just for me, it's like, do we really believe this is happening, right? I mean, that they're really doing this. And so you can go through that. But for me, and the Colts now with the weakness, you may be starting a 44-year-old. But they're in my mind, the top 10, they're there. Jumble a few of them how you want. I would have the Rams ahead of New England at one. I think the Rams being at four is too far down because they're consistent basis. They're as good as I've seen this year. And that quarterback right now is the MVP in Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but right now we have eight teams with three wins or less in the NFL. Yep. And then you can add in a ninth team if you want to go with the four-win Atlanta Falcons.
What did JB and I do with that conversation, Segs, early in the year? Remember when JB came on? We said, and we've been saying it, this is bad. There's as much bad football as there is good football. And what you just said validates it 100%.
Yeah, and I mean, real quick, just looking ahead, the New York Giants currently right now sit with the number one pick in the upcoming draft, and I think that would be amazing for the Giants to have that number one pick, to have that open coach sitting there, that job open right now. That would attract a lot of coaches to get that number one pick. Not because you're going to use it on Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore or whoever, whatever.
They're not using that pick on a quarterback. Jackson Dart's the starting quarterback.
Trade it and get you know, a decent little haul for Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore from a team like Cleveland if they want a quarterback, or you know, New Orleans if they want to jump up for a quarterback. There's a lot of teams that still need a quarterback, and they could be looking to trade up into that number one pick so they can select their guy at number one.
Agreed. Because with Jack, listen, I've seen enough of Jackson Dart that that energy, he's worthy of being the guy. I've seen, and he's got enough skill set to elevate. What you do is you don't say that. You just put it up there and you leave it out there, and you force teams to say, we'll give you another number one. We'll give you a number two and a starter. You can get four or five players with that number one pick, considering, look at the shitty stuff at the back end of this power rankings, as we just talked about. So, and Mendoza's proven, again, go back and watch Mendoza play against Penn State the last drive. And if you had any questions, they'll be answered there. And then just look, he's got the number one team in the country right now, and a lot of it's due to the way he throws the football. So, Segs, I'm and Leeds. The Giants are going to be in really good position to get a bunch of players, and whoever that coach is going to be will help validate that as well.
Yeah, and Ian Ramos asks here, who do you all see the Texans draft? And the only reason I am answering this, because we're so far away from the draft, is it's easy. The best offensive lineman on the board. Whoever that is, that's who the Texans are drafting.
Three of them.
You're going to continue to draft them throughout.
Yeah, I'd focus as much as I could on offense, Segs. The defense is pretty damn good. The back end is young. If you ask me, a matter of fact, going into the draft, you don't even have to pine for them to do it. If they don't draft an offensive lineman, that's franchise malpractice. I can tell you that.
100%. All right. Switching over to college football, your guy, Ed Orgeron, was on, and he was just talking about, you know, he was asked about the SEC paying players before NIL. And here's what Ed had to say about that.
In time a little bit. We've had a lot of SEC guys on here. They've never admitted it, but we all know that SEC was NIL before NIL.
Hey, you know,
we're way past it. Can we now just admit
it's all good? Hey, you know what? I say, hey, coach, you know, you've been out of coaching for a while, and how are you going to adjust that NIL? I said, well, it's a minor adjustment. And they said, what do you mean? I said, back then, we used to walk through the back door to cash. Now we just got to walk through the front door to cash.
That's, of course, Ed Orgeron on with Busting with the Boys, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. Everybody's always known it. It's just now they can basically openly talk about it because it now is legal to just give kids kind of whatever they want and get them, you know, the NIL deal, quote unquote. And it's just insane how much we've changed in such a quick period of time since NIL became legal.
He's not lying. I could tell you this. I know a teammate of mine that was offered 100 head of cattle to go play somewhere. I know I got a phone call, and I'm not going to – I'm past that point 35, 40 years. So what do they call it? The statute of limitations? Yeah. So I would say whatever we want. Coach is right. I can remember, as the number one recruit in the country, you'd be amazed at what they offered. But I can remember getting a phone call from an alum. Man, it wasn't at SC. I'd tell you the truth. I'm about to tell you a quick SC story. But that said, as long as you decide to come here at this school that called, and it wasn't an SEC school. So SEC ain't the only one that was given money.
Oh, no. It was all
offered. College. No question. Offered. Said, as long as you're here and the rest of your life, you'll never have to worry about a vehicle again. So it was expanded beyond my time at Southern Cal or wherever I was going to go in Southern Cal. Because I promise you, as I said, it was not SC. But I will tell you what happened when I got to SC. By the way, Eric Dickerson, death penalty, that Lance McElhaney, Craig James would have never had to go through it if this was this time. Matter of fact, they'd have been applauded by it. They would have been at the forefront of NIL.
Yes.
And at this time, they lost the program. And then Lou Holtz would come on and say, yeah, they just went through the death penalty. They got like seven players on the team. They're getting ready to play a number one ranked Notre Dame. A little nervous about this. They're 65-point favorites. And Lou was nervous that SMU was going to give them a game. But that's why Lou's a motivational speaker and been great for a long time. Segs, I'm at SC. And we were assigned alumni. They may still be. Well, when we get to Troy Aikman, we'll know now you're assigned an NIL guy, yes. Right? We were there, and to sell tickets, you'd at the end, beginning of the year get now. Then they went to the electronic tickets. We got caught for ticket scalping like everybody else should have, because what you do, they give you your tickets and you'd sell them to your alumni. All right. But when you played UCLA and Notre Dame or a big game like that, that was extra. They had to pay extra for those. And as I sit here, just like you see in the movies and you see on your little TV show, I had my guy assigned to me. Before the Notre Dame game, he'd drive up. We'd meet in Heritage Hall with an envelope. And I would, no checks. We don't take checks or direct deposit, brother. We would walk into the lower bathroom. If you walk in Heritage Hall and make a right, there's a bathroom right there. That's the one. He'd stand in a latrine. I'd stand in the bathroom next to him. Handed me an envelope full of five times the money you would pay for a Notre Dame ticket, times right. Four or eight. I can't remember. Might have been four we get and bought four more, and then you'd turn around like you did your Super Bowl tickets and sell them for more. And it was cash paying for that Notre Dame game over and above the ticket we'd received or the money you got. And he handed me the cash. Boom. Gave him some dap on the way out. Said, talk to you again, and was gone. And I didn't owe anybody that money. That money went into my back pocket to buy pizza or buy a beer. And it was significant. You tell me if $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 for tickets for a game weren't significant back then for a college kid who came from a blue collar. I had no, and scholarship check is spent because you're paid your rent if you're living off campus, right? So that was it. That's how they did. Now I could have sat in the coach's office,
right?
And he could have walked in and said, hey, Sean, here's your $10,000. Thanks for that post that you did for my automobile company or my technology company on social media, if we had it back then, and could have handed it right in front of the coach, and nobody would have batted an eye. Coach Orgeron's right. Went in the back door with a mask on and put, instead of LSU, you put out an Alabama shirt, even though you're from LSU. And now you just go in the front door loud and proud. Matter of fact, you drive that damn car up to the front door and drop it off for him. That's where it's at. And that was rampant then, illegal, rampant now. Not illegal. It's a good time to be an athlete, that you got carte blanche and autonomy to do whatever the hell you want. Those are true stories, and there's 1,000 more of them that I can share with you. The $100 handshake was more than a $100 handshake. The TV in our apartment had nothing to do with us being able to afford to buy it. Let me just put it to you that way. And we watch good-ass TV on Sundays.
I just got word that the IRS has been listening, and they'll be, you know, checking in with you soon.
Well, the IRS better check the damn cells, because those some bitches are about to get banned anyway. And we're going to spend our life without having to pay any more federal taxes. So
that
save
would be,
it.
Okay? That would be.
And plus, I'm an honest taxpayer anyway. Come find that guy. I mean, this was Monopoly money, sake, so you could do it. It had nothing to do with me. I mean, I was just passing it on to the next guy. There you go.
Yeah, well, we're talking about NIL, and you mentioned Troy Aikman. Obviously went to UCLA, and he says, quote, I gave money to a kid. I won't mention who. I've done it one time at UCLA. Never met the young man. He was there a year. He left after the year. I wrote a sizable check, and he went to another school. I didn't even get so much as a thank you note. So it's one of those deals to where I'm done with NIL. I want to see UCLA be successful, but I'm done with it. And, you know, everybody's assuming that he's talking about Oregon quarterback Dante Moore, who was at UCLA for a year. And remember, this was a kid who was at one point in high school going to Michigan, because he's a Michigan kid. And then all of a sudden it was Oregon jumped in the mix. I think he was committed there. Then he was going to go at one point to USC, the rumors were, and then back to Oregon. And then all of a sudden here comes UCLA, and that's where he commits. Well, everybody knew he got a bag from UCLA. Went there, he got his money, got some experience, got to play as a true freshman, and then boom, makes the move to Oregon, where sits behind Dillon Gabriel for a year, learning the offense, and then he comes out now, and now he's a projected top five pick in the NFL draft. So, I think I understand where Troy's coming from, because it's basically a thankless gift that you're giving to your former school or your alma mater or any school you want to give to. If that's the case, and it's something that I think we're going to see a lot of here over the next, you know, maybe couple decades. And then it may start to fall off, because people get sick of these kids unless we, regulate it, where, you know, the transfers and all that kind of shit that goes with it, people will stop giving money to these schools because it is thankless, and it doesn't help, because UCLA is still one of the worst teams in college football.
Yeah, I can tell you this, and good on Troy for keeping the kid's name out of it, and you could read between any line you want.
Right.
But I got news for you. 9 out of 10 of them would have sold the kid out, and rightfully so. It's chicken shit, whoever it is, whether it was him or somebody else. I can tell you this, Troy Aikman, it's not a matter of I understand. He's 100% correct. First off, I wouldn't give a dime to NIL unless I saw the kid face to face and I want to know what he's about. I would also be a little concerned, and I can compartmentalize, if I knew all this, you know, with all these, I went here, come back here. If I'm an NFL team moving on, I got to be concerned about, is he a good decision maker? Can he make quick decisions? Or is he always, is he a pinball all over the damn place? Now, he's a good player. But the one, listen, screw me once when it comes to money, and Aikman's got plenty of money, but you know what? It's principle. I don't care if he gave $10 million or $1 million or $20,000. The bottom line is, it's principle. And the fact that part and parcel, without even having to be told, your 18, 19-year-old kid, do you have to be told, absolutely told, to write a thank you note, and you don't? Who does that when it's money? You should have crawled 10 miles over broken glass to hammer one out in Troy Aikman's shadow, let alone thank him, okay? Okay, you get what I'm saying? That they should have done that. Said, hey, can I have, can you double it up? Who right. doesn't thank somebody for that kind? I don't care if it's $100 or $100,000 or $100 million. Whoever that was, it's bad. And you know what? The problem is now if you're a UCLA alum and you start to see that burn the guy who was your best quarterback you've ever had there and who loves UCLA football, who and saved a little more embarrassment from selling the kid out. Imagine if you're a richer alum and has all that money, that you're not thinking, well, when's this going to happen to me? So what do you do, Segs, when that happens? Now you button it up, say, no, the kid's going to come here. He signs this in front of us. I want to know who it is. It's like giving money to charity. You don't need everybody else to know, and nobody knew Troy did until this happened. The other side of it is, when you give to charity, Segs, guess what? Don't you want to know where your money's going so the people are getting it, not 80%? They're paying their bills with it, and it's going to pay their mortgage. It's going to the charity and the kid or the dog that you know specifically, like Make-A-Wish. Go Make-A-Wish. Or Danny Thomas and the Children's Hospital, right? Where you know that you're saving a kid's life. I want to know where my money's going. And with NIL, it's the same thing. If I'm giving it, I want to know what dude, and I want to meet him face-to-face. He doesn't get to duck me if right. I'm giving that money. I think it's chicken shit. I think it's weak. And I can promise you, Troy spoke on it. You think that's the only athlete who hasn't bolted and never thanked the guy who paid
him? Oh, yeah. No, it happens a ton.
Yeah. So it to me, and I don't blame Troy, they wouldn't see another dime because it's not the school or it's the character of whoever you're giving the money to. You also shouldn't have to have the school write some form letter to somebody NIL, not that they did it here. You should make sure the kid knows. Just like when I had an alumni, they introduce you and make sure your thanks go above and beyond, because guess what? The second semester, that dude's funding your pizza, beer, and quite right. frankly, money that you wouldn't have, where you don't have to write a doggone check for $10. It's going to bounce because you ain't got no money in it. So if you're going to enjoy the fruits of the labor and getting paid, even when you haven't put all the labor in just yet, it would be nice to thank the guy who's paying it. And it is a thankless gig. And you know what? There's no guarantee you're winning a title. And right now, UCLA is about as far away from winning a title as you and I are. And we're not even on scholarship.
Right.
Yeah. Bush League and weak.
Yeah. It's just, it's one of these things with NIL and with the way college sports are changing that, you know, it's such a, I think it was Kenny Dillingham. And he was talking about how it's such a mess. And he says, quote, "We've created a mess. The whole industry is a mess. The only thing that's not a mess is the dollar signs. Those are pointing up." So, I mean, when you say that, and it hits so true when you're talking about this Troy Aikman story, is that you give this money and then it just goes and you never know where it's at and what it's doing. I mean, it could just be going in someone's pocket. It may not even be the kid. It's just such a weird dynamic because there are no regulations with any of this. It's just a free-for-all right now in college athletics. And it's not only just the high school kids getting it. I mean, we're seeing Sam Levitt transferring from Arizona State, speaking of Kenny Dillingham. he is leaving because, first of all, Arizona State's not a great program to help him get ready for the NFL. He can go somewhere else, make a massive amount of money in 1 year, and get put on the biggest stage in multiple games getting ready for the NFL in 2027. So it's just such a different way of thinking about college athletics that it's not just high school kids anymore. It's transfers, and your team changes so much from year to year that it's hard to gauge how good you're going to be when it's college basketball, college football. Even college baseball has gotten bad with transfers.
And you know what, Segs, with this, I'm not sitting on the fence, but I have such mixed emotions on NIL. They should be getting paid, jerseys and all that, but the other side of it is we're not doing it right, okay? The kid should be rewarded. That's no offense to 4-H, because I'm in Texas and 4-H is huge. Scholarships, the rest of it, or anything else. But I got news for you. The accounting department at Texas A&M, or as Arizona State, while it's going to be big, some of those nerds are going to make $1 billion and you're going to work right for them someday. But they're not filling up a stadium on Saturday to be watched. The football program is. Duke basketball program is. Kentucky hoops is. You get my point. But think about this. You just got done saying it's a valid point. He can go somewhere and play big time football. This team was in a playoff last year and playing the Longhorns.
Right.
So, I mean, Arizona State took some steps. Just like Tulane's done, just like we see James Madison. I mean, took steps, played good football, a lot largely due to him and Scataboo and the way they play and their coach. And think about the way the high road Kenny Dillingham's taken. How many guys do you know? He lost a lineman who he says is a big-time stud.
Yep.
And he's losing Sam Levitt. Now, I want you to think how many coaches. Can you imagine Kirby Smart saying, man, you guys are going to get a great player when that guy goes out the door? Now, Kirby's Kirby. But Dillingham is on social media, is quote tweeting and giving great love to the guys that are abandoning him for more money and a chance. So I would imagine over a beer in private, Kenny Dillingham's probably like these some bit. I mean, maybe not. Maybe Kenny's just better than the rest of us at the high road. But I love the high road. It's just think about where we are. You're losing a guy. It'd be like you going up and hugging the guy who stole your wife.
Right.
Okay. You go, hey man, thanks. I'm in love with her, man. She's been great to us and the kids. Yeah. But hey man, you know what? Good luck with her. I hope it turns out, because she'll probably leave you too for a little more NIL money. You get my point. It's like, and then you're going on and saying, man, maybe 20 years later you love the guy because he's good to your kids, but at the time you're like, what just happened? And then you got to compliment the dude. Hey man, he's really slick. He came in here, man. You know what I mean? Not even your wife. Yeah. We're just talking about just the kind figuratively. And then Kenny's sitting there saying, hey man, he's going to be great. You're getting a dog. And of course, but damn, that's what it's come to. We're still kissing the ass of the guy that's leaving me as opposed to the ones that are here. And listen, God bless Kenny Dillingham. And he's a damn good football coach. Arizona State's not going to be his last stop, even though that's where he went to school.
Yeah.
Kenny's got I'm pretty sure that was his alma mater. I think he went there as an undergrad. So Kenny, he's going to do fine. But I can tell you this, for all those that don't know about Arizona State, send your kid on a recruiting trip there. You may think differently about
he'll
it.
Never it's come a good back. Place.
It's in a great area. And put some golf clubs in his hands, because it'll be fun things to do on days off. But there's a lot going on among golf being one of them, Sakes.
Yeah, but when it comes to Sam Levitt and the transferring, think back, 3-4 years ago, Jaden Daniels was looked at as an NFL quarterback like Sam Levitt, maybe a third, fourth round guy that, you know, could play his way into being a starter at some point in his career and has the talent to be pretty good. But we don't know about, big time games, playing against the best of the best week in, week out, like in the SEC or the Big Ten, whatever it is. He moves on to LSU and has a monster year with the Tigers, and then is drafted number 2 overall behind Caleb Williams. So I think that's where, and it's the same school, same coach. It's Kenny Dillingham. It's Arizona State. That's where Jaden Daniels left to go to LSU and Sam Levitt.
And there's a chance that if you're Lane Kiffin, I would be all in on the Sam Levitt sweepstakes. I'm trying to go get his ass too. And it ain't tampering once the portal's open. You go openly, go get him, man.
Yes.
And so you may see a repeat of this with just a different coach at LSU. No doubt.
And that's where I think in the end that the NCAA needs a new governing body. They need somebody to come in and completely clean this thing up with the way that we're doing NIL, with the way the transfer rules now work. And it almost, like, I'm almost to the point where I think we just need to get rid of conferences, get rid of them all, and set it up more like a professional sports league where you have, let's just use AFC, NFC, and you just have half the country split, and then you have divisions, you know, what you could set them up however you want, and then we do it that way, and then that's how we have playoffs, and it works, and then you have the winner of the AFC play the winner of the NFC, and that's how it goes. I mean, you can figure it out however you want to figure it out, but the multiple different conferences, and it's just nothing's working right now, and the transfer portal outside of NIL is the biggest problem right now because it is a free-for-all. These kids are transferring every single year. I mean, we've
thousands of kids will be in this portal.
Yeah, we've seen quarterbacks play six different places in 6 years. That's insane.
And a great bunch of them. In the gig I am is the NSR guy, Segs, is a national football guy. You start looking into rules and statistics even deeper. A majority, a third of these guys about are not going to have a place to go. They think they're going up. They're going to transfer down or have to go to a complete different division to get a chance to play, thinking there's going to be a spot. There's only so many scholarships you can have each place. So, and money that they're going to go. I will tell you this. You want a simple way to do it. The Power Fours break off and form your own governing body. The NCAA's power is in its ass right now. They don't have a whole lot of power.
Yeah, they don't do anything.
That acronym is no longer, that's not powerful. You want to make it simple? Let those four go. Find your national champion, your playoff of those four, and all the rest, however you want to distribute it, we'll figure that out. They have their own playoff and national champion, just like Division II or FCS does.
Mm-hmm.
North Dakota State, and if they want to be in it, because they can beat a bunch of Division I schools anyway, the Power Fours have their playoff because the majority of them are going to be in a playoff anyway. I mean, the majority of teams in the playoff are going to be from those conferences.
Yeah.
Find it. And you know what? You could keep the Heisman Trophy real among all of it. Do it all. Just separate. Get their own governing body. If the NCAA still is involved with the rest, fine. Or if they need their governing, you're going to form players' unions and NIL. Then we'll start to fix it from there. But first and foremost, when the governing body has zero power, that's not a good place to start from.
Right.
And so you want to then we don't have to worry about, man, what about the group of five getting into the playoff and we're making spots for them and moving goalposts for Notre Dame and all. Now you got four conferences. And guess who will be forced to find a conference, Sake?
Notre Dame.
They'd have to, correct?
Yeah.
If we did that, there's not, hey, we get everybody and then you three get to just party on your own and make all.
Or yeah, or if you split them up and just have divisions, you just put everybody where you want them, like.
But it's realignment. Like, do you think the New England Patriots have a choice when they moved them or the Milwaukee Brewers from the AFC, the American League to the National League? No, this is what we're going to do. But when the governing body, when the SEC is more powerful than the NCAA, you can't do that right now because they'll say, screw you, we'll go off on our own. But think about that. Another way to force a hand from anybody who wants to remain independent, yet your basketball team's playing in the ACC, but you're not. If you really want to fix it, say, here's how this is going. And if you're not part of that group, the Power Four, you're going to go play in the other one. You think Notre Dame wants to go that? Because guess where the money goes?
Right.
And then they get to have their bowl games, their championship. They can have 32 teams if they want or 16 teams and soak in the Power Four. And then we don't have an argument. Then let's let it rip. Pretty simple. I'll be the commissioner if you want, or I'll be the player rep for the union. I'll do that too. I got a master's degree. I can handle that. So there you go. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just a lot of a lot of figuring out college sports has to do because it's not
good
just
luck.
Football. Like I said, it's basketball is insane with the roster turnover year to year. It used to just be the one and duns. You'd bring in a couple one and duns and then they're gone. If you're at Duke or Carolina or Kansas or wherever, Kentucky. Now it's the transfers change everything so quickly. And it's just, it's amazing that, you know, for example, a team like Michigan that I root for, they lose their entire front court, which had them in the Sweet 16, which Dusty May brought in as all transfers. And then this year, best team in college basketball, with three new transfer bigs that you know, they get in the transfer portal and he completely remakes his team with just, I think, two or three holdovers from last year's team. It's just insane how college sports are working right now.
Segs, it used to be one and done with Calipari led the way in Kentucky.
Right.
You'd go get seven McDonald's All-Americans and six of them would be first round picks after 1 year and you'd go to the next group and he bought into it. Now one and done, even before going to the NBA, means one and done here and then transfer to go get more money. That's what one and done now. That's the power one and done. The one and done to go to the NBA becomes the, oh, that's right. We used to do that where a guy would have 1 hour, 1 year of eligibility or get in 1 year of eligibility in a college campus and he could go in basketball. Well, to the pros. Now you get the one and done is, oh, man, thanks. You made $3 million from us, but you want to go somewhere else and add a little veteran as a sophomore or junior, and then go somewhere else to get more. And now you've got a team that's in there, you know, put it this way. Some of this NIL money is going to keep guys doing like what the Wisconsins and old school Dukes and back in the day where you'd stay, Grant, you'd stay the whole time, right? Because you're getting paid and those guys would have got paid more. But one and done now means you were here and now you're gone, but not to the NBA. And some guys are going to make more money than they did in basketball. They'll make far more in college than they ever sniffed in the NBA because some of these guys are just not going to make it, even though they were a big time recruit, one of the McDonald's All-American. But so they're looking at it thinking, man, I could stay here and make more money because the chances are I'll end up in some G League and maybe be out of the league. Because as you know, there's guys that get drafted in that first round six and you never hear from again. But if they're in college making NIL money, you still hear from them.
Looking ahead to the college football playoff, we have Miami faces Texas A&M, which will be maybe the best. You know, we've got
first round
Oklahoma,
game.
Oklahoma, Alabama, and then Miami, Texas A&M are the two power four matchups we have with the group of five teams playing Oregon and forgetting who else, even Ole Miss. So, but Texas A&M's offensive lineman, Trey Zun, said something that is just insanely idiotic to me. He says, he was asked, what are the keys to stopping Reuben Bain, who's arguably a locked top five pick in this upcoming NFL draft. What is the keys to stopping him? And Zun went on to say, I don't think he's a threat that we need to worry about. We'll be able to handle him. I mean, these are the type of stuff that if you're Mike Elko, if you're, you know, the offensive coordinator, you're telling your kid like, hey, just shut your mouth. There's no reason to give that kid who is arguably the best pass rusher in college football.
Some think he's the best player in college football.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any type of bulletin board material to walk into this game and just look at you and say, I'm going to destroy you, because he has that type of potential when he's playing at his best. It's just not smart to do. If you're Zoom, I don't care how good you think you are.
Right. I know how social media loves this stuff, and we all love swagger and confidence. But have you ever heard of the phrase called work in silence? Mm. Do your work in silence. Listen, I understand big fellas like to get out there and dominate it and go and let them know that, hey, we're not backing down from you. But the less Bane knows, when you go into a situation, a meeting, a test, an interview, and know very little about what they're thinking mentally, you're at a disadvantage when you're the one who controls that narrative. So right now the narratives have shifted. You've thrown it on the table, and now Bane gets to whatever that is. It takes a really good player and makes him even better. Now, you very well may stop him. You very well may have a plan. Why share it? Of course we know you're going to say, you don't have to tell us everything. I've tried to say that. I mean, we love it because it makes for good fodder and banter on a show. But what's the advantage of saying it? All the players, because I got news for you. Motivation and all the chatter is fine until somebody knocks you right in your dick, and then all that motivation goes away. Then you got to gear down, put your hand in the dirt, and go play football. So I understand the confidence, but couldn't you say that among 85 and in your locker room, say, we're kicking this guy's ass, he's not touching our quarterback and all that? Yet there's just – I don't understand, other than for social media and for optics, why it would – be advantageous. Your coach and you could stand up and you guys can say whatever you want about Bane and Miami. I just don't know why. I don't know. Maybe a suggestion on protocol 101 or handle the media for dummies. I'm not saying the guy's dumb, but maybe it's like, great football player, but he's also got to deal with a great offensive line. Boom. Good. Now he's like, oh, yep. Okay, they respect me. And maybe if he thinks they respect him a lot, that while he's going to have energy go play, there's still that psychological advantage that does exist in all sports and in life. And sometimes working in science, I've never understood this, Sags. I understand in the field you get dominant, but leading up to it, say all that after. Yeah, you guys talked about how Reuben Bain was good. He didn't get one tackle for loss, didn't touch our quarterback. Now the proof's there. Now what if he goes and gets three sacks and disrupts and wrecks the game? Now guess what you're going to be told? Yeah, I guess that you spoke a little too soon and got that guy. Yep. Even if that wasn't the thing that got him fired up, that's what everybody's going to say. So I don't understand the advantage. I think A&M could beat him, but I don't understand the advantage of us come up and me saying, yeah, screw Lawrence Taylor. What's that guy got to do? We got Gary Zimmerman at left tackle. He'll kick his ass all the way to Sunday. Lawrence ain't squat. We're not worried about him. We'll handle him. And then all practice week, guess what we're doing? First of all, Zimmerman would have looked at me and said, you dipshit.
Yep.
What do you mean? I'm the one who's got to block him. Two is all practice week. Now you're sitting there geared up for it. You're thinking, and guess what our practice was always geared around when you faced Reggie White or Lawrence Taylor, Sakes? How we're going to slide the line to stop that guy. We don't need to let everybody know. The whole world knows who the best player on the field in this bowl game is, and it's that cat right there.
Yep.
Whether he plays the best that day, I just don't understand. I don't need to tell Walter Payton that we're going to stop him or Barry Sanders. They know you're trying to, and then when you don't, they get the last laugh, and neither one of them was going to celebrate your face. In this case, I don't know. I don't know what purpose it serves. I like swagger, but sometimes swagger and silence ain't a bad thing, Sage.
Yeah, it just and it still just sucks that we're sitting here Wednesday. We should have these playoff games this weekend. Like they should
be on the 20th or whatever.
Yeah,
it is, right?
This, you know, give us one Friday night and give us three on Saturday, you know, and line them up and let's go. Why we got to wait a week and a half to get these? I mean, these teams, they're able to get, you know, their
do it all year long
in a week.
They do it all year long.
Like,
yeah, I agree.
Just waiting and waiting around for these games makes it really tough. Speaking of Texas A&M and who Reuben Bain will be chasing and Zune will be protecting, Marcel Reed announced that he will return to school next year to Texas A&M and continue to play quarterback for the Aggies instead of going to the NFL draft. This is a smart move for him. I mean, this is something where he can go have another really good season, continue to get better playing the position, you know, work on his mechanics, get all that down, and then he'll walk into the NFL draft next year and he'll be a good prospect that a team will look at and say, you know, you got good size, you're tall, you got a good arm, you can use your legs, and that's what the NFL likes right now. And he could turn himself into a top draft pick. So I think returning to school was smart for Marcel Reed.
Tremendously smart, and not flirting with some transfer portal to go get more money
right. To
do it. He's doing taking all the steps right. He's well coached. Now they lose Colin Klein to Kansas State, so yep. They'll have to replace that. But he's well coached. He has made great strides. He's the best all-around quarterback they've had there in quite some time. And aside from defense, he's a big reason why they're winning. Because remember LSU, or when you get down, the guy maybe threw a few picks, but his resilience and coming back was another step in the right direction. So watching him play, which I do a lot as an A&M guy who's down the road, but then my kids went there and just loving the program. I have watched him a lot in that position, and I would have said, if they would have come to me and said, Sean, what you value? I said, oh, you can draft him, and in 3 years, he'd be pretty damn good, I think.
Right.
But I would have said, more polish, more throwing consistency to where if you take his legs away, he can still beat you. That's the next level for him, the consistent accuracy. I think this is wise, and he's primed, if his improvement and ascent continues, to be a first-round big-time Heisman Trophy candidate and a first-round guy, because he's going to go in with a lot of momentum next year, Sakes, because I saw great growth in him, and I know A&M did as well. I think this is a wise move for a kid who stayed in school. I'm sure he's getting handsomely paid with NIL, but also who understands what the polish is needed to get to the next level and to perform there. Because nowadays, we're not sending rookie quarterbacks in the league that are first-round picks saying, see you in 3 years. We're sending them in and saying, we'll see you in August. You're the starter, so right. Get your ass ready. He needed another year, which instantly makes A&M a top three, top four team going into next year automatically.
Yeah, it's nice just to see a kid go to a school and stay. Just
no doubt.
Stay for 4 years, play quarterback. You get to play quarterback for three of them, and you turn yourself into a top pick, hopefully. if you're Marcel Reed
and a chance to win a national title.
Yes, with a chance to win a national title. So, I mean, good for Marcel Reed. Something else I forgot when we were talking the NIL, a new trend that we're seeing schools do, and Utah announced theirs, that they are signing with a private equity firm, a deal with a private equity firm that's projected to bring in the neighborhood of $500 million to the university to be used on athletics. Now, maybe it's upgrading some facilities, it's spending in NIL, it's all the paying coaches, it's everything you could do with that money. But we're starting to see teams do this, sign these deals with equity, private equity firms that gives them so much money moving forward. Now, on the other side of that, the two schools we root for, Michigan and USC, the Big Ten is trying to do this in a massive deal with a private equity firm where every team in the Big Ten is involved. And Michigan and USC, I think wisely, were kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I don't want a full league one. Like, we can do our own and probably make way more money than what we're going to make in this deal that we would be stuck in for as long as, you know, the Big Ten wants to be in it. And they're still working through the details of that because Michigan and USC have basically said, no, we're not in this. And the private equity firm saying, well, it's all or nothing. We want all. I think it's 18 teams now in the Big Ten.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, we want them all. So it's just, it's fascinating.
Michigan, another you know how fascinating, much money they could make, right?
Yes, yes. But it's fascinating. That's another layer of the NIL that we weren't talking about just a few minutes ago, that now these teams are making these deals with firms that are bringing in hundreds of million dollars into their program.
Segs, this is going to be a trend everywhere.
Yes.
For schools. It's going to be a trend. You know, and here's the deal. If you and I start a company and we're in the friends and family raise, and all of a sudden a private equity firm says, you know what? We'd like to jump in now. You know how much you know how much power you have to give up?
Right.
They pretty much, well, you're no longer the majority shareholder.
Yeah.
So that's why your people, now we'll get to private equity firm maybe a little bit down the road.
A little bit later.
But we've established it's rolling in, and we can then. And then you get to the first round of funding. They say, okay, now jump in. I mean, they're jumping all in. But you also know when a private equity firm could this much money. Guess who now controls the university if this comes to fruition? The private equity firm. You're going to give up a lot of control for $500 million plus. And you know how long it'll take them to utilize that $500 million, meaning the private equity firm, to either go raise or do it? It won't take them long, say.
No.
There's a reason why private equity firms are really rich and those guys build big buildings, kind of like Vegas, and they're betting. So I get it though, because now you're funding a full program. It's almost a, well, it's an event where I'll see in 25 years, we're good to go, or however long it lasts, right, Seg? So
yeah,
it's a security blanket, but you're also, you get to give up some power. If they're raising 500 million, or they got a private equity firm for 500 million at Utah, no disrespect, because there's a lot of money in that state and from that school. But Segs, USC, I'll use my school as an example. You think that that $500 million could raise them about another $500 million and get you to the B word? Probably, right?
I
understand their reluctance not to get in, at least is what I'm talking, depending how long the deal is.
Yeah, I'd say you could multiply that by four, and that's where
you may start to see
USC, Ohio State, Notre Dame, that's where they're talking.
The University of Southern California / unpaved private equity. That's the name of the school when you go in, right? You know, the front where it has the name of the school when you drive in, and the signature part of the school when you drive in to get in. Well, it's SC and then / the name of the private equity firm, because basically you've turned it over. Oh, or the name of your building is no longer Heritage Hall. It's the name of the private equity firm that's paying all that money. So good on them, but this will be a trend that will not go away soon, because it's too much, too many zeros to pass up, and too much guarantee and security.
It's basically these schools. And this is where I also wonder, are we heading towards everybody just being independent and making their own schedules and figuring it out that way? And then we, you know, if everybody's just independent, we don't
have a mad scramble to get the seat when they open it up for the students, and they run to get their seat because it's, or a Southwest Airlines until January, and they do it where you just go get the seat, right, Seg? Yeah. Same thing with here. Let us go get our own shit. We'll go schedule whoever we want, right?
Right. So you just never know which way this is headed because, as we've talked about with everything when it comes to the portal, the NIL, now this type of deals being made at colleges that, you know, it's the wild, wild west. Anything can be done right now because there is no regulation. And it's fascinating to see what schools are doing at the school level by basically almost selling a chunk of their team and their athletic programs to a private equity firm.
Not all those. You know, that's exactly what they're doing.
And then you have the kids getting their money, and then they can, and then the bottom rung is the portal. They can come and get their money and then bail and go somewhere else and get more money. It's insane.
Well, Segs, I'll ask you this, and we can do it another day. A private equity firm that puts $500 million, $1 billion into it, who's more powerful now? The private equity firm or the athletic director when it comes to hiring and firing the coach?
Well, it's private equity firm.
So you are giving away just like you would in the early stage of your company investment. The sooner you give to the private equity firm because they know you're desperate for money, the more you're giving away and a lot of it.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to see where this all heads. All right, to end the show as we do every single day, we'll go to the NBA tonight with our bet of the day.
And we're on a friggin' roll, so we recognize.
We are. We got a good game tonight, though we are missing some stars from the game. We got the Spurs at Lakers. So the game's out in L.A. No Victor Wembanyama. No LeBron James, because I don't know what's hurting right now. If it's his, if he pulled a tube or something along those lines. Who knows? He's
might have been a vulva bone. I don't know.
Yeah, vulva bone. Yeah, it could be cracked. Who knows what he's
doing. Hey, but he might be doing another movie. Who knows? His production company. I don't know. Yeah. LeBron's got his hands in a lot of big money stuff.
Maybe he's watching Bronny at the G League or watch Bryce sit the bench at Arizona. I don't know. Maybe he's, invested there.
Got plenty of money to do whatever the hell he wants. He's had a pretty good career, hence why we still are discussing this, but I'm with you, brother, 100%. Yes.
So the bet of the day, Spurs at Lakers, Lakers -7.5 as it stands right now with a 240.5 over under. That's 100.
I'm taking the
20. Oh, geez.
Do they play defense
in the NBA anymore?
No. Give me the over. You know my feelings about an over. That 240. It'll be a $130 to $127 type of game. I'm just telling you, I'm taking the over. I would say Lakers without Wemby, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of defense played, Six. This is a night where Luka gets you 43 and somebody else has 36. And I'm taking the over. This is going to be pushing the 245 range tonight. Like it is 125, 120, 127, 123. Give me the over. I know you're going to say, man, it's a big over. I understand. Yeah. There's a reason it's a big over. And
Lakers -7.5. I'll take the Lakers tonight.
You're going to get hosed by that hook, dog. You're going to get hosed by that hook. Somebody's going to miss a free throw to get you to 8, and it's going to be 7.
When it's 120 to 119 is the final score, and you're sitting 1.5 down, sorry.
I like my odds better. I don't see a lot of rim protector on San Antonio.
I don't see
Lucas scoring 40. That's anywhere. I'm with you.
I saw a video today of a call from, this was probably the 70s in the NBA where a guy coming in, he gets the ball and takes 1-2 and goes up for a jump shot. And he's called for traveling.
Oh, yeah.
And then
4 now. Yeah.
And then it cuts to Giannis starting a step in from half court. He takes 2 dribbles and 9 steps to get to the basket and
finishes at the dotted line in the circle, and it's not traveling. Okay.
And it's, just an amazing play by Giannis because, he's so good, but yet the rules have changed so much. It's just
so you saw the 70s. What kind of nut hugger shorts were they wearing?
Oh, they were short. Yeah. Like if you had any bit of length, you were showing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, or you wrapped it around your waist like a drawstring.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't know. Well, I wouldn't know the experience of that, but just maybe. I'm talking about just from watching hoops, Eggs.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about watching hoops, But Man, I imagine that made a lot of people horny back in the day, those shorts.
Oh, yeah, those
shorts. Oh, yeah, I'm sure the ladies love that. Yeah.
They were.
But maybe when you don't know, like when we were wearing them in high school, because I wore them in high school, maybe you thought they were hot. I don't know. And I see, I go on the golf course and I see some of these high school kids now wearing 5-inch inseam shorts.
Yeah, that's.
That you can read the date on the dime in the back of their thing, their ball marker, the quarter. But I'm like, yeah, how's that comfortable? I know they're stretchy now and there's great stretchy shorts, but I look back and I think, what a brutal look. What a bad look, man.
It's just crazy.
The nut huggers, man. You bring them back and they'll sell. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, we've gone from the nut huggers to, you know, with the and one mixtape in the Fab Five at Michigan with Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Juwan Howard. They started the baggy shorts, you know, below the knee. And then one took it and took it further down to the shin.
Yes.
And they're just oversized. And now we're
awful
trending back. Because, like, look at LeBron. Go look at LeBron in 2003, 2004, his first couple years in the league. His shorts are huge. Now go look at his shorts with the Lakers this season and last season. They're tiny. They're going back towards the nut hugger. And in a few years, it feels like we're going to be at the nut hugger range.
Oh,
I don't get it. Just
those baggy, it's true. It's like, and to go back and look at the suits, like when Jordan got drafted, it was like throwing a tent on top of you. The suit would hang down below, like low thigh, just like above the knee, the suit jacket. And Dustin, you're right. It had nothing to do with white boy or not. Because I didn't wear this drawstring. Mine was a necktie because I spent a lot of time in suits. But otherwise, I digress, thanks. I just needed to respond to him.
Sure.
White boy is what it is. But you're right, Sags. We'll get back to John Stockton and Larry Bird, white boy shorts soon, and Dave Bing. Because it's cheaper material to make too, Sags. So I guess less short equal less money that the apparel company. Maybe I'll make them with my unpaved apparel, nut huggers, and that's what they'll be called.
Yet they charge $140 for less material now.
I'm gonna get you mine for a hundy, Segs.
Okay.
Same good material, but I'm gonna lowball the other companies that are forcing you to spend too much money.
There you go. All right, when we come back tomorrow, we're gonna be talking more football. We'll start looking ahead to the weekend, what we got in the NFL. We got teams fighting for playoff spots, especially in that NFC. It is so jam-packed in there of really, really good teams that we discussed in our Fox Power Rankings that came out today that, you know, who do we look at and who do we like moving forward? Who's going to get left out? Maybe we can ask that question instead. Which of these teams are going to get left out of the NFC playoffs and how many wins could they have? Could we see an 11-win team get left out of the playoffs?
I think you're going to get an 11-win team possibly in the NFC miss out.
The chances are very, very real. All right. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, thanks to Triple E.
JB back in the mix tomorrow. He'll join us tomorrow.
Coach JB will also join us tomorrow. Thanks to Triple E. Laura Bailey, as always, are behind the scenes making this show look and sound great every single day. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury to get all the notifications of when we go live Monday through Friday. Have a good night, Sean. We will see you tomorrow. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.